Chris, and thanks, Robin. So,
as Robin mentioned, the title is going to be Betting on Quantum Theory. That's a name I borrowed from Robin. It was the title he chose for my summer project. Started a bit late, so I'll skip an interesting story, and if we have time, I'll mention it later, but let's just dive right in. All right, so I'm going to first start off with some motivation, tell you why this is interesting and why you should care and not leave. And then I'll give a bit of background on classical gambling and review something called the Kelly Criterion. Then I'll explain our attempts to come up with a model for quantum gambling and some of the problems we ran into, some of the challenges that were involved. Once we had this model, we tried to come up with some scenarios we could analyze and see if that would lead us on the right track. So I'll describe five simple ones that we proposed, and then these two results that we needed to come up with in order to solve or find solutions to the problems, which I'll present at the end. So a bit of motivation. Why do we care? Why should you care? Our overarching principle is that we want to study decision-making in the face of uncertainty, and that's a really general topic. It's something which we do every day. Everybody does this. Whenever we enter a situation where uncertain, we need to make a decision. We have to act fast. Our political leaders are supposed to be experts. So the person or the object, creature, making the decisions, that's going to be called the agent. They operate under a set of decision-making rules. Agents can be people.
Amoeba, small black boxes with decision-making rules that we don't fully understand, or maybe a quantum computer. And then they are trying to optimize something. So in regular gambling, this will be money. And this is why gambling is a paradigm that we can use to understand this. It has uncertainty built in from the nature of the game. We're not sure what the outcome is going to be. We have to bet our money. We want to optimize our money. And betting strategies are going to be the decision-making rules. Whatever it is we choose to do, however we decide to allocate our money, our resources, that's going to be our betting strategy.
Okay. Let's use classical gambling. Let's start out with an introduction. I mentioned in the abstract that there's going to be a talk about roulette. Well, it's not quite roulette. It's generalized roulette. So we assume we've got a spinner, like in the game of Twister. This spinner is spun by the casino or the person operating the game. We assume that independent spins are IIB. So one spin does not depend on the previous. Its final location does not depend on where it began. In our case, we've got two sections. You can have as many sections as you like. For simplicity, we use two. And we assume that the area of the sections is such that the probability of the spinner landing in one is p, and the other is 1 minus p. Okay. So the game is played, and an agent is asked to play the game. It has to bet money on these two sections. The game uses even odds. So whichever outcome is declared winner, that one, the amount of money that was bet is doubled, and the other money that was bet on the other is lost to the casino. The agent has to bet the entire bankroll. And this is not what we would do when we go to a casino. The agents don't have mortgage payments. They don't have to buy drinks when they leave. They don't have to catch a bus home. So it can bet all of its money. It has nothing to do but play the game. So all of the bankroll is played. The agent uses a strategy, which we denote by X. X is how much money is placed on one section, and 1 minus X is on the other. So you can see that X is going to be a fraction of the total bankroll. Okay. The agent doesn't change strategies from game to game. There's no reason why it should. The game itself doesn't change. The rules don't change. And the probability is a fixed number. It's a set spinner. So there's whatever is optimal in one game would be optimal in the next. And the agent has no need to change strategy. In real life, you'd think, well, if I get it wrong the first time, maybe I'll change. But we assume that the agent is a rational, intelligent agent, knows what it's doing, and can figure out the best strategy before playing. The goal here is then to optimize the amount of money that's won or profit. So you might think, well, let's say, for example, that the probability here is 99% and 1%. You walk into the casino. You've got $100 burning in your pocket. Put it all on yellow and see what the outcome is. I'll take my chances. It's not going to be pink. But and this is called all or nothing betting. It's a strategy given by 1 when p is greater than 0, and 0 when, greater than a half, and 0 when p is less than a half. It corresponds to putting all of your money on the most likely outcome. So you think this is possibly a good betting strategy. So let's analyze expected value of money. And without loss of generality, assume p is greater than a half, we play the game n times. Well, since 2p is greater than 1, this goes to infinity as n goes to infinity. You assume, hey, I've made money, let's do this every time. But it's not actually a good way to proceed, and the reason is because this is a geometric game. So you're not adding or subtracting a fixed value each time, you're actually multiplying by some factor. So anytime you lose, if you're betting all of your money and you happen to lose, you now have $0 and you can't play anymore. So as far as an agent is concerned, it's dead. A better measure is to use log money, and I'll explain why in a second. But if you use log money, let's say we're still using the all or nothing betting, then you can see that there's a non-zero probability of having log zero, and you get minus infinity. And that's called gambler's ruin. So why log money? Well, in all or nothing betting, the total outcome that you would have if you had won n times is 2 to the n. But the probability of that happening is vanishingly small. And in fact, any time you lose, you now have $0. You have no money left. And so the probability of having $0 goes to 1 as n goes to infinity. And this is because this is a geometric problem. So looking at log money, the distribution actually follows a binomial random walk, and the median follows the mean. So using expected value of money is a bad measure. You don't quite see. The mean is here, and the median is way down here. Okay. So let's see what's actually the best strategy. Return to log money, expectation value of log money, and log money here is actually the growth rate of the binomial, of your money. And you find for an arbitrary strategy X, we want to maximize this expectation. Use your favorite method, Lagrange multipliers are fine, and you find that you find an optimum strategy of X equal P. This is called the Kelly criterion for gambling. It's found by John Kelly. It's known by a lot of professional gamblers and things. It's not always optimal. In this particular case, Kelly is log optimal. There are no other strategies which have a higher growth rate than Kelly. For those of you who are interested, we did a small side study where we introduced a random perturbation to this game, which broke scale invariance. So whatever your value of money is here, whether it's dollars or yen or something, it doesn't matter because it's scale invariant. So when you introduce something which breaks this invariance, we found that actually it's not true that Kelly is always optimal. But if you're interested, you can ask me later. Okay, so that's classical gambling in a nutshell. Yeah.
When you said that the expectation value was not as log money, but money.
This one here?
Yeah. Oh, it goes to infinity.
It goes to infinity as n goes to infinity.
But the actual expectation value is zero, of the infinite game.
Well, no, so the expectation value is going to be probability of having this outcome, which is t.
Times the amount of money you have, which is just going to be 2. As you play n times, this becomes 2p to the n. The other
term is 0.
Stop after n. And
if you stop after n,
you take the limit in which n goes to infinity.
Yes.
N goes to infinity. But if you play the infinite game, your expectation value is 0.
I don't see that.
That's a pretty... I mean, what you're talking about is two limits that don't commute here.
Yes. Yeah.
So, in a way that it's almost a semantic issue.
Right.
Well, it's a way of saying in which why this is a bad strategy.
But it doesn't generalize. It doesn't. So you can. It doesn't allow you to show that suboptimal strategies are suboptimal because the infinite
just
game.
Just the zero. But it shows that this, in a certain sense, it shows that this all or nothing strategy is bad.
But we agree all or nothing is bad.
Yeah.
So then, right, that's a review of classical gambling.
And in fact, this Kelly criterion is important. I'm going to be coming back to it a few times when we generalize quantum mechanics. Okay, so with some background information, now you know the jargon, the things I'm going to be saying, let's try and build a model that we can use. We tried to come up with a few different models. We used physical models, real things that we could describe in familiar language, for example, harmonic oscillators. But most of these had problems. So the idea here with these oscillators is that we had a small black box, say a quantum computer, and it had an onboard oscillator, like a pendulum or a mass on a spring, and it would move around in, say, a field of other oscillators. And every time it would encounter one, its goal was to maximize its energy, so it would try and steal energy. You may have seen these simple coupled oscillator demonstrations where you couple two oscillators with a spring and they transfer energy. The idea is the same here. But there's a problem, aside from the fact that working with the interaction Hamiltonians and things like this, it got messy and ugly and wasn't elegant. You need to know your own distribution, the agent's phase-space state. You need to know how fast and the amplitude of your oscillator in order to be able to accurately steal energy.
Model building. What are you trying to build a model for here?
For quantum gambling in general.
And I'm a little lost just in general how whatever you're talking about here connects to the previous.
Okay.
So we had gambling strategies a minute ago. Now you're talking about harmonic oscillators stealing energy.
That's right. Yeah. And so
somehow you're putting that in terms of gambling.
Yeah. The small couple, the oscillator with a black box, with a quantum computer, it wants to steal energy from other oscillators. But it's uncertain of their state. And so it needs to make a guess or use some sort of decision-making rule to guess the state of that oscillator and optimize its energy. This is another reason why using these models was...
I mean, can you easily put this in terms of X and P that we had on the previous transparencies, or is this...
These not, but we do come up with a different one, which is... It's much more general. It doesn't really use these silly oscillators and things like that. And that would actually get confusing, yeah.
Is it fair to say that what you're describing here is an attempt to model quantum agents betting on quantum systems using harmonic oscillators that really didn't work because it got too complicated?
Exactly. Okay.
Because that's really a segue to go to something that you can solve.
That we can use, okay. Yeah, something we want to do from scratch, but we wanted to keep it very abstract, so we didn't have to worry about the confusing issues that we're dealing with. All right, so let's figure one out. We start out, we assume that we've just got two registers, as general as you can. We've got a state, which is described by psi, and it's got
two registers, N and M, which are a product state. Now, this state here is going to be the one that the agent can use for its gambling. All right? What it can do, it can perform any CP map on this state. That's going to be described by betting. Betting will be a CP map that the agent can perform on this state. And these CP maps have to make sure that they don't change the total number n plus n. And you can see here that this state here has the same Hilbert space as a bosonic field, which has two modes. So you could write this as a single ket with a comma, ket n comma m. And what we're saying here is basically we want maps that the agent can apply. They have to commute with the total number of excitations. It'll be clear here.
The trust wave function?
Exactly, some trust wave
function. Why was that?
It came out as a consequence when we were working with it, but we didn't realize this to begin with. This was actually an interesting thing. I mean, this leads to quantum optics, the analogy I'll make.
You're just calling it bosonic because n can go from 0 to infinity.
Exactly.
Rather than just from 0 to 1.
That's much better explanation.
So you're not symmetrizing your wave functions?
They end up being symmetrized. We work with in the box space representation. Okay. Psi here is a state that the agent has, and it corresponds to the state of the game. And then the casino, which is separate from the agent has no say in what the casino does. It does two things on these states. So one is some sort of filtration,
where erase is one of the registers, and the other is doubling. And if you think of this generalized roulette game that we had before, this is what happens in a regular casino. The croupier spins the roulette wheel. It erases the bets that you had on the losing numbers or choices. And then for even odds, it would double your money. You can say amplification because it doesn't have to double, but for simplicity and for consistency, we say doubling. So those are the operations that the casino does, and that corresponds to their actions. The game itself is these two parts alternating. The agent bets using maps which commute with the total number of excitations, and then the casino filters and doubles the state. we let the agent play the game as many times as it likes, unobserved. So we take ourselves out of the picture, and it's just a small quantum agent playing this game, and it does so until we step in and observe the state. The reason why we're trying to do this is because we eventually want to somehow be able to address the measurement problem. We want to take ourselves outside of the picture at the moment and just see what the quantum agent does on its own while we're not paying attention. So when we come back in later and we measure, we'll measure its total number of excitations of this field, or perhaps log n, and see if we have two agents with different betting strategies, which comes out ahead, which has a better strategy. We use this to figure out what optimal quantum gambling could be. Yep.
Just to erase one.
An erase is one of the modes. That's all it does. It takes them.
Some probability erases one or the other.
That's different. Those are different scenarios we'll describe later. But the action of filtering is just going to be to erase a mode. And then you can do this as a probabilistic filtration or later, or just deterministic in one particular mode. Okay. Since we have bosonic fields and things, we can make an analogy of quantum optics.
The better at the end doesn't know which one was erased. Is
that right? It does, yeah.
It doesn't
beforehand.
And does it afterwards?
In the sense that it knows without us making a measurement.
You don't sell it, but I mean, otherwise you wouldn't need the CP. If it knew, then it would always be starting either just from n comma 0 or 0 comma n.
So that's the simplest case.
Yeah.
This model allows lots of different variations. The simplest one is where red always wins. And you can add more complexity and let red win some of the time and black win some of the time. And you can keep adding more complexity. But the basic operation is a filtration that filters out one or the other, but can be either deterministic or probabilistic.
Okay, but does the agent know after the filtering takes place? After the filtering takes place, you have either n comma 0 or 0 comma n, right? Is that right?
If it's probabilistic, you get a mixture.
Right, but with some probability you get one and with some probability. Does the agent know which one you get, or the agent only just... the agent doesn't really know which one it is. The agent just gets to work with the density matrix that is the mixture of those two. Is that right?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think
to understand how this maps onto the classical problem,
okay,
which is that n plus m is like your starting pot of money.
Yes.
N is how much you bet on one outcome, m is how much you bet on the other.
Right.
And then, you know, one outcome or the other is filtered.
Yes.
And then you have a doubling of the point. Yeah. So the classical gambling game can be obtained as a special case of this if you do what? If you restrict the CP maps so that you're not allowed to do coherent operations?
That's right, yeah. And the filtration as well also has to be done in the same basis that the agent works, in which the agent works. So before I describe here. So here we've got N and M. These correspond to
two modes. But you can work in... You can consider a field that has different modes. So as an analogy, which I'll come to later, you could have horizontal and vertical for polarized light, but you could also have polarizations which correspond to diagonal and anti-diagonal. And so the filtration operation has to work in the same basis as in which the agent bets.
Yeah, and in fact, the one you're describing is one of the scenarios I'll present. Okay, so let's set up the analogy with quantum mechanics, with quantum optics. I said before, this is bosonic field, and the excitations here would correspond to photons, and the different modes, one would correspond to horizontal, the other to vertical, or perhaps some other deterministic set of modes, which we'll describe. So, as I said before, we can also use the Fox space representation, which just makes things a little bit more convenient. If we're using this analogy of optics, and it's important to note that we don't have to use optics. Everything can be done as an abstract scenario where we just have a field and operations are just called filtering and doubling. But for the sake of this talk and for allowing a very useful physical intuition, And to talk in a language we're all familiar with, we'll use optics. So in this sense, the filtration is going to be done by physically putting a polarizing filter in front of your light.
So you send a beam of light, photons out, they pass through a polarizing filter, that will filter out one of the modes. The doubling operation is done using an amplifier. Not extremely sure of the details of this, but essentially whatever goes into the amplifier comes out with some caveats, which I'll point out in a minute. So as an example, say we have a state which is a single photon and it's horizontally polarized. So that's the agent. It puts its state as a single horizontally polarized photon. It's passed through a filter which is aligned horizontally. In this case, that filter is just going to be the identity map. And then it's doubled using the amplifier in the same basis, the horizontal vertical basis. So once the game is played, then H goes through the filter. It's unchanged, and then it's amplified, or in this case, it's going to be doubled. So our initial state is going to be two horizontally polarized photons, which can be written like this. And I've written it as a density matrix just suggestively. Okay, we're assuming that the agent starts with a well-defined N, and that's actually pretty crucial, the fact that it has a well-defined N. I'll explain why in a few minutes when I get to some of the other results, but we just take that as a given at the moment and haven't considered the case when it doesn't start with a well-defined just yet. N here, as I've been saying, is the total excitation number, and that's going to be the N plus M. And the fact that it's well-defined means that it's just going to be an eigenstate of this N operator. The agent's free to allocate the total number of excitations, which is like having his money, among the two different modes using any CP map which commutes with N, so that he's not creating or destroying money or excitations. And then once he's done that, he puts it through, and the casino plays the game, and his state passes through a filtration operation and a doubling operation. So that's the setup of our model, and we want to use this now to come up and see if we can find answers using these scenarios. So the first one, sort of what you were describing, Rob, it's where we have a probabilistic filter, which filters in the HV direction, and then doubling happens in the HV direction as well. So a coin is flipped, and then either the photon is filtered through a horizontal or a vertical filter. The second scenario is when we have, it's not a probabilistic filter, but it's done using a deterministic filter in psi, which is described by, say, alpha H plus beta V. So that could be, for example, a diagonal filter or something similar. Doubling then happens in HV, and that case doesn't have any sort of probabilistic filtration. There are no coin flips. The third one is a mixture of the first two. It's a probabilistic filter, but it happens in the psi and its associated orthogonal direction psi bar. And again, the photon is going to be doubled in HV. Scenario number four is going to be a probabilistic filter. This one's, I'll mention now that numbers four and five are still pretty much open questions at this point. I'll bring them up here because if you guys can come to me with some ideas, I'd love that. But it's going to be a probabilistic filter in more than two potentially non-orthogonal directions. And then doubling will happen in HV. And number five is going to be like having a classical agent. We're going to have a filter which happens in psi and psi bar, which for a classical agent who works in HV is sort of mind-boggling. And then doubling happens in a completely different basis, phi and phi bar. But since it's a classical agent, he's only allowed to work in horizontal and vertical and doesn't fully understand these two directions. So those are the scenarios we want to consider and see if they can shed light on quantum gambling.
Yeah. It just sort of occurs to me, and this is maybe a comment, that the list would make more sense if there was a zero, which was deterministic filter in H or V, and then doubling in H or V. We sort of skipped that one because it seemed trivial.
Right.
But anyway.
But a simple example could be that photon example I was talking about here. I mean, this can be deterministic in H, doubling in H.
So there needs to be a probabilistic filter. Is there a parameter there that the casino says with probability P, we will use the horizontal filter?
That's exactly. Okay. So, like you're saying, let's set this one up.
Just a follow-up question. And then when you say the doubling is an H slash V, you mean the doubling is in the basis which the coin flip chose. So the coin trick says that the coin flip says horizontal filter, and then you double in horizontal.
That's right. Yeah. For, in this case. And the reason that the basis is, seems to be important is because you can't double in an arbitrary basis. It's a basis-specific operation. If it were, you can end up with cloning.
I guess if your alternatives are orthogonal states, then you don't need any conditioning. Sorry, for if your different filter states are orthogonal, right, then there is an operation that will tell them both. It's only when they're not orthogonal.
Yeah. This, yes.
But that's what we're talking about. The, when a basis is specified for the doubling operation, it merely means that that is the basis for the amplification. So you, H goes to 2H, V goes to 2V, but you can't clone, so you have to pick some basis. That's all.
So none of your examples involve doubling the ones that are not on those things?
None of that's not possible.
Means examples are okay, that's not okay, yeah, so in scenario one, that, there's a coin flip. The casino will flip a coin, and
the coin is not necessarily a fair coin, so it'll land one side with probability P and one minus P with the other. So that's exactly what happens. F will filter one direction, and in this case we've chosen HV, just without loss of generality, HV, and it filters that with probability P and one minus P respectively. The agent, on the other hand, can set up a state like this. So we call an allocation a distribution of the total N excitations. And you can see here, just looking at this ket n minus n, that's one allocation. We've decided to put n excitations in horizontal and n minus n in vertical. And the total strategy here is to use a superposition of them like this, a superposition of allocations. It's the most general case that we can start with at the moment, and it produces a density matrix of this form. So we need to know at the moment, what is a filtration operation? And it's not quite as trivial as you'd expect. The moment I'm calling it an amplitude damping channel, and that's not exactly the same amplitude damping channel where that's familiar in regular quantum optics. It's got the same name because it does the same sort of thing. For any arbitrary state n, m, if we're, say, we're filtering out the vertical mode, any nm will go to n, 0. So regardless of what's in m, this gets set to the zero excitation. Okay. And you might expect that you can have an operator F which acts on psi such that it gives you the filtration you'd expect. And it seems likely that you'd have it as a sum of projectors of this form. But this doesn't actually work. If you have a state psi which has only terms that have non-zero numbers of excitations in the vertical mode, for example, as an explicit example, psi here, and notice that this has well-defined n, 2, in both states. Or sorry, yeah, for both. Then because neither of these have a 0 in the vertical mode, obviously psi is going to be orthogonal to any state of this form. And so you get 0 in the bad sense. This doesn't actually accurately describe the operation. Another thing to note is that this is not a unitary operation, because clearly, given this state, there's no way to distinguish what the initial state was. But you can make this state unitary using Stein-Spring dilation theorem. And the typical way to do this is you introduce an ancilla like this, so a third mode, perform a swap, which is unitary, and swap the one you want to throw away with the ancilla, and then do just that, throw away the ancilla. And that can be done in this way. But the problem is that I said that total n is well-defined. It's a fixed n. And what that means is that A and B are correlated. This is the correlation. So if we're throwing away the ancilla, which contains information about N, we're throwing away information. But we can't completely remove that information from the system because N is correlated with M. And so what we're doing effectively is decohering the system. We're not actually throwing away information. So we need to come up with a representation of this operation. And it can be done with this super operator, and it can be written in this form. This inner product here removes coherences for between terms that have different numbers of V excitations. this is specific to a filter that filters out V for H. It's an obvious analogy. You just have zero J and so forth. But if we have a well-defined N, this F removes all the coherences, because any coherence has any coherence will decohere the system when it's passed through this filtration. The reason I said at the beginning that we need to have a well-defined F is because if it's not, this result doesn't hold, and we can't actually proceed with the analysis as it is at the moment. OK, so let's come back. We wanted to find what is the active filtration. Yeah.
Is this more on the same point, or are you going on to?
I'm going to use this to solve a problem.
So I'm confused on why you said that your imagery for this was quantum optics. It was just a beam of photons passing through a polarizing effect. So can't you, if you want to choose horizontal, why can't you just set up a horizontal polarizer? I mean, why isn't that your model for the filtration? That's what I don't understand.
What would it be?
It is.
That's the CP map for a polarizing filter.
So you're just saying that this thing, you're just saying if we think through what a horizontal polarizer does,
yes.
Yep. This is what it does.
It's not as obvious as you'd expect.
It's not what you might think.
Exactly.
But this is what it does.
You might have thought this. Yeah. We didn't at first, and then we felt fairly dumb when we figured out the problems with what we had thought.
I see.
Yeah. Okay, so let's use it now to solve the problems that we want to look at. So I was saying that this is going to be a probabilistic filter. So here's P and 1 minus D. So
is the ancilla, and that thing's just the other beam? I mean, a polarizer is a non-unitary object.
Right.
But you could make it unitary, like instead of having it destroy one of the beams, you could have it send it off to another beam. And
yes.
Then you could go through that, and then you could discard that other beam.
Yes.
That's what you're ancilla.
That's what we're saying.
It's the other beam. Is that fair way?
Yep.
If you want to actually think about a filter, it's heat modes within
the
polarizer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so let's go back to the scenario. So,
as we were saying, it's a probabilistic filtration, and with probability p, we filter out the vertical mode, 1 minus p, it's the horizontal mode, and this is going to be the state after it's passed through the filter. Then we need to double, but since we're doubling in hv, and this is written in hv, everything just goes, nm goes to 2n, as you'd expect. And so we now want to find the expectation of log n, just the way we did in the classical case. So we find the value, and we maximize it. And there's a couple of things that come out when doing this calculation. One is that any time you have a strategy which contains a term like this, n comma 0, so if this is our total strategy, it seems to be a superposition of allocations like n minus n. If we have a term which has n equal to 0 or n equal to capital N, we end up with one like this, with an allocation like this. And that leads to gambler's ruin. The reason is that you'd have a non-zero probability of having log 0 in your expectation. And again, that gives you a minus infinity. So we know that we can't have terms like that. And we also then know that a superposition of different strategies like this is not going to be optimal. The reason is that once this is passed through the filtration, this superposition, these coherences are destroyed, and this just becomes a mixture. And even classically, we know that a mixture of different strategies is not optimal. There's one well-defined strategy which is optimal, and so we know that having a total superposition like this can't be optimal. Okay, so that leaves us with a state of this form. So this is the only type of state which has the potential to be an optimal strategy. When you maximize it, this is what you would find. But this is precisely the Kelly criterion. So before we had x equal p, where x was a fraction of the total, which would mean that as a number of excitations, you need np. The only small subtlety is that these need to be integer numbers, but even in the classical sense, really, everything is physical and can only be subdivided so far. So the message here is that in a classical game, a regular probabilistic game, the quantum agent doesn't have an advantage. And that's sort of what you'd expect, and that's what you were asking, what would happen in a classical game. But then we move on to non-classical games. So for example, a deterministic filter in a direction which is not H or V. And the filter is going to be characterized by alpha H and beta V, for example. And we know that if this is where quantum optics is useful, if you know that if you have perfect classical knowledge of this filter, you can prepare your photons in the state ket psi, which is of this form, and they can then be passed through the filter with 100% transmission. The problem is here, doubling is a basis-specific operation. So if you're preparing your states as ket psi, well, you could represent that in the psi bar basis, and you wouldn't be able to double in exactly that way. So if you could double or amplify an arbitrary basis, psi going to psi tensor psi, that's precisely cloning, which is a violation of this theorem. So we have to first consider how to properly do doubling in different bases. So the way we do this is to start off with two different agents, Alice and Bob. They're given exactly identical states, and they both filter in the HV basis. So up until this point here, they have identical states still. The only difference then is Alice is going to double in HV, but Bob will double in some different basis, phi bar, which is given down below. Okay, again, assuming that they have a well-defined N, in order to change basis, you have to use this. So written in the HV basis, a ket of this form, or a matrix of this form, will be written like this in the phi bar basis. So Alice will first double in HV, and then change basis to phi bar, whereas Bob will first change basis and then double. And the reason we're working in the phi bar basis is because we want to compare their final density matrices to see if they have the same distribution of total number of excitations. If they do, then doubling would be basis independent. So after doubling, unfortunately, this is Alice's density matrix, and this would be Bob's. Both are written in phi bar. So by inspection, this is clearly a block diagonal matrix where the blocks correspond to different values of n. And in order to show that they have the same distribution of n, you look at the trace of the blocks. So here, this notation means that this is the block corresponding to total number of excitations n, and we're taking the trace. And indeed, for Alice and Bob, these turn out to be the same. So they have the same distributions. Well, this is important for us because we've said that agents can apply any CP maps they'd like to the states before the game is played. And that includes the map which, say, takes all of the trace or all the probability and puts it into a single diagonal element and then redistributes it according to a chosen betting strategy. Well, that then means that the choice of doubling basis is irrelevant. You can double in HV or you can double in phi bar, and that's not going to make a difference to the total number of excitations. So then we'll return to scenario two and see how that affects us. So if we're filtering in, say, D, so if the filter is aligned in D, that's unitarily equivalent to filtering in H, which means that the doubling basis would be unitarily equivalent to filtering in D or A, phi bar. Psi or psi bar. But then we've just said that the doubling basis is actually irrelevant. So we can just assume that we're doubling in HV. In that, if you think about that now, what we're doing is we're filtering in HV, doubling in HV, and that's the same thing as the first case. The only difference is that now we have the probability P is equal to 1. So whereas a classical agent could only apply the Kelly criterion, a quantum agent is able to transform this game into one where he's certain of the system. And so the optimal strategy would be to prepare all of your photons in the psi state so that they all pass through the filter. But this then is the quantum Kelly criterion because it's an identical case to scenario one, and n comma zero in psi bar is some superposition in HV. So we call this a superposition strategy. Because in the HV basis, which is the one that the classical person would be restricted to, you need to prepare a superposition. And clearly, that's not accessible to a quantum, sorry, to a classical agent. So this would be a direct analogy. So this would be the quantum Kelly. Okay, let's try scenario three, where now the filter is a probabilistic filter with probabilities p and 1 minus p. Well, you can treat this, since it's probabilistic, we're going to have a mixed state. You can treat either of the two terms separately. And again, filtering in f and psi and psi bar is unitarily equivalent to filtering in h and v. And doubling basis is irrelevant, so you can also then double in h and v. And so this one is an identical case for a quantum agent to scenario one. Filter in hv, double in hv, and it's probabilistic with probability 1 p and 1 minus p. So then if you have a well-defined N, as we've said before, this game is exactly the same as the first, and Kelly is going to be the optimal strategy. But again, this is a quantum Kelly strategy, because really this is still working in a basis that the classical agent can't use. And so this is going to be a quantum Kelly criterion right here. Now is when things get to be a little bit of an open question. I don't really have concrete answers. But the idea here is that we're trying to consider a case where we're filtering in more than two potentially non-orthogonal directions. So for example, on the Bloch sphere, horizontal, vertical, and diagonal, as an example. And what we want to do is we filter in mode psi I with probability pi, and we want to be able to completely describe the filter and to know what the state would look like once it's been filtered. And you'd expect something perhaps of this form, because this looks correct classically, at least, anyway. But the problem is that this, again, doesn't work. And as a quick example, let's consider why. Suppose we do a 50-50 filtering in horizontal vertical. That gives us a density matrix, which is identity over 2. Similarly, 50-50 filtering in diagonal and diagonal will be identity over 2. But the problem is that we can't then distinguish these states. By given this matrix, we can't decompose that into a proper to figure out the filtration basis and our initial probabilities. So obviously, this then doesn't completely describe the filter.
I think actually that what you've written is technically incorrect.
This should be single agent single.
Right. So they're the same for single excitations,
that's
but for
n. Yeah. That's just a typo. Yeah.
Okay. So in this case, the optimal strategy was to prepare n over 2 in hv. And in this one, it was going to be n over 2, but in ad. But these two are not equal. You can't say that these two states are equal. And so this does not completely describe the filter. Okay. That's essentially the most interesting thing we found in this so far. If anybody has ideas, please come talk to us, and then that would be useful. And the last scenario is scenario 5. This is going to be a classical agent playing quantum games. So filtration happens in psi and psi bar. Doubling happens in some different arbitrary basis, phi and phi bar. But the agent is confined to work in hv and does not, you can't comprehend these other directions. If we consider this case, this for a quantum agent, we've done something similar. I mean, we can unitarily transform this to hv, and then the basis phi, phi bar, that's irrelevant. So this is going to be the same as scenario one, where we use the quantum Kelly strategy. But a classical agent can't transform the system at all. There is no unitary equivalence for a classical agent, so he must work in the hv basis. So we don't have complete results at the moment. We're still working on that. And if anybody is able to give some suggestions, that'd be great. So where we're going to go from here is then just finish up those two, and now try to look at the case when we don't have a well-defined N. N is indeterminate. We can't apply the results that we came up with for the amplitude damping channel, and our analysis needs to be modified a bit. From there, we're going to try different betting strategies. So a superposition of strategies, so a Kelly criterion, which is slightly different. And that, at this point, language is starting to be an issue, which is why I spent a lot of time building up the model so that you get used to the language. Here, we don't really have a very useful language, or at least I don't at the moment. And lastly is one where an agent doesn't have perfect knowledge of the system. And so in our scenarios, the agent did know what the state of the filter was. It knew alpha and beta, had perfect classical knowledge. If the agent doesn't quite know what to do, that's an interesting open question at this point. Okay, I think that's it. Thank you.
Questions?
So I want to sort of get a, or explore what you have in mind for this non-orthogonal probabilistic filtering.
Right.
So you have many states which are not necessarily orthogonal.
Exactly.
And do you imagine what you want to do is like a generalized measurement? So imagine that the device is mm-hmm. doing a generalized measurement. Mm-hmm. And then depending on the outcome, it puts in some kind of attenuator.
Okay.
With a different magnitude of attenuation depending on what the outcome is.
Yeah.
Is that a physical
model
of
this form? And as Robin was saying, you can't double in an arbitrary basis. So obviously something needs to be changed. But I think
this is just
like
the filtering. Just the filtering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. I
mean, I think that would be kind of like what you described there, right?
Okay.
So, with the different size.
Right.
Weighted by different P's,
right.
The different projection operators,
okay.
Weighted by different P's. Right. Yeah.
Okay.
So that still looks pretty good to me. So what was wrong with that?
There was just a simple counter example for this. I mean, in the case where you do have exactly two orthogonal directions, and it's an equal mix, then this breaks down. It doesn't completely describe the filter because given a finite density matrix, you can't reconstruct what the filtering was. There's no way to tell whether it was an HB or AB. And it's because it's a maximally mixed state that it can't be decomposed properly.
Bill, I'm not sure if your original description of the filtering was what we had in mind. The scenario here is that the casino picks a random number between 1 and 3 with
mm-hmm.
some probabilities.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on which number it gets, it either orients a polarizing filter along H, or along V, or along D.
Oh, that is different.
There's not really a POVM going on there.
Right.
And
okay.
In particular,
okay.
It's not a single particle operation.
Mm-hmm.
It acts on all the photons at once.
Right.
And that's probably why you cannot sufficiently describe the filtering process using just the single particle density matrix built up in that way.
Okay, now I have a better idea of what you have in mind. So there's a coin toss first, or a roll of the die
right.
first, and then there's the filtering.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this one too, and that's one way to think of it was exactly what I mean, but said, and what do you think before? And that's something that I kind of had in mind, but this is why, especially for me, it's a bit difficult to talk about this because I don't fully grasp it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. So there's some way to describe that coin toss.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly that. The coin toss.
Is a coin toss followed by a projection only? Or?
Well, not projection, but a filter. Yeah, projection. So you roll a die or flip a coin, and then conditional on the output or the outcome, you place what are these polarizing filters, for example.
And put a polarizing filter, and then we have two channels coming out, and what happens to
those
two channels?
I've actually reached it.
It's a filter. There's
it's going to be one. 2,1 is going to be erased, but then
2,1 is erased.
So one is going to be zero. So really only one that's make through for H, if it was in the HB and you put in something only the HB term, for example.
I think it would be rejection if you were limiting yourself to one proton state.
Well,
but in general,
this is a trace preserving map.
This is a map on density matrix.
This is a trace preserving map, right?
Yes.
Part of the reason for discussing this amplitude damping channel is that we kind of proceeded for a while under the it's a polarizer, right? Polarizers are described by projectors. And that turns out to be just a mathematically incorrect, right? They're described by trace preserving maps because a state always comes out.
Right, but, I mean, but it would be a projector if the input state was always just a single photon state. It's a projectable, you'd have to renormalize.
You'd have to post-select on the output being a single photon state as well. Because if this can map a single photon state to a zero photon state.
Confused.
Let's go down another track.
So I realized I was confused early on about how the doubling was connected. So these, as far as I understand, were independent operations.
Yes.
But it seems to me that you could make the doubling operation depend on the filtering operation, and you might get an interesting game as a result. So consider the case where you generate a number between 1 and 3 and decide which of three bases you're going to filter in. Well, you've still got that integer around, and so you can say, well, now I'm going to double in the basis that I chose to be filtering in.
Yep.
And so imagine, the BB84 betting game, where your four possible states are just equally distributed on a plane of the box here. And it seems to me that that's an interesting game because you could imagine that it's a bit like a classical game where the spinner is going to come up in one of four quadrants of the circle, but you're only allowed to put your money on half on a hemisphere. So you say, well, I'm going to bet on the hemisphere here because the probability of this is greater than that. But I really would have liked to, I also know that the probability of up is greater than the probability of down, so I'd like to have bet in this quadrant, but I'm not allowed. I had to bet in this hemisphere. So if I either got to bet in this hemisphere or this hemisphere, and I get certain winnings. But I think the quantum strategy will allow you to bet, a pure state sort of halfway between, say horizontal has higher probability than vertical, and diagonal has higher probability than antidiagonal. My intuition is that the best quantum strategy would be the state on the block sphere that's between horizontal and diagonal.
Seems
so, rather than a mixture of those things.
Are you describing, just a question?
Yes.
You started out by talking about correlation between the filtering and the doubling.
Yes.
But then it sounded like what you described at the end was exactly our scenario 3, but with four possible filter orientations, or was there something funny going on with the doubling as well?
Well, I'm not sure yet. I think there is something different going on because as far as I understood it, in your scheme, the doubling operation was always fixed. Regardless of which direction the filter was placed in, you double along some fixed basis. What I'm saying is that you can double along one of two bases,
right,
and the choice of which depends on how you filter it.
But what Grant actually showed is that the doubling basis is irrelevant given that the agent has the resource of performing any CP map that commutes with M. In other words, if you double in basis number 1 or you double in basis number 2, the agent can convert the output states of those into exactly the same state. So as far as we can tell, that really does allow us to rigorously say, okay, we never have to talk about the doubling basis again, unless the agent is restricted in what CP maps they can perform. And that would, I think that even applies, I'm not positive, to fancy things like having the doubling basis depend on the filter or whatever. But not positive.
So I've gotten lost a little bit in the logic at some point. When you started out, you said a strategy would be a CP map, I guess, together with a choice of initial state, is that right? And then, is that right?
Yeah.
And then later on, you were describing strategies just by states. Looked, is it? Is that because it's just a degenerate kind of CP map that always just throws you into that state?
Okay, so the active betting is the CP map, the CP maps that you apply. And then your betting strategy would be a choice of allocation, like this.
Okay, so the choice of allocation, I mean, that's a state, that's not a CP map. That's
right.
So what's the relation between those two things?
Between the maps and the state itself?
Yeah.
So the seeking map is what you would do to implement your strategy, and then it turns out that a better strategy is in fact just preparing a single state.
So you always use only a very, although you gave yourself this whole range of seeking maps, mm-hmm. You end up using only some very trivial kind of seeking map, and it throws you into a single state.
That's
module of this discussion about the irrelevance of the filtration phase.
Just like in the classical case, it turns out that the sort of information left in the roulette wheel, you know, how your money was distributed across the winning outcome is irrelevant. You just bulldoze it all into one. Exactly right.
So is that in some sense disappointing? Or the quantum means that the quantum is does that make, I mean, do you like the results or not like them?
I have no preference personally. I like it because
you think it's an interesting time.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, speaker.